the spotlight and forced you to deal with a tense situation. Maybe it just happened that way, but I don't trust coincidences. If this was intentional, then it's not a small matter. Manipulating a drunk human is one thing. For someone to have altered the intensity of my potion, that's another matter entirely. The only way to do it would be to sneak into my lab and tinker with my ingredients, which is unlikely unless they've got skills on par with Gideon, or to spread some kind of amplifier to the humans encountering my spell, making them extra vulnerable to it. The implications of either option were impossible to miss when she laid them out so plainly. How would they even know to do something like that? Two ways that I can see, although there could be others. Either they knew I was going to end up here, enchanted by this exact potion, and prepared in advance, or they assessed what I was on in the brief time before I hit the trade floor, whipped up the amplifier, and distributed it through the coffee or air or something, all while we were going over stuff in the break room. Either way, pulling off a feat like that would take incredible forethought and resources. Someone would have to know almost everything about me and how I work. If this isn't all coincidence, then you're dealing with someone truly dangerous. I resisted the urge to gulp this time, as my focus was already back on the booth and the lone employee I'd left behind to handle it. Perhaps I should get back to Lillian, just in case. Good idea, Amy agreed. And be careful, Fred. So far, these have been inconveniences, minor challenges. If whoever's doing this decides to escalate, things could get bad, fast. That was all the motivation I needed to move. The moment I saw Amy exit through the door, I made for the trade floor at a near sprint. Whatever was going on, I'd be damned if I left Lillian on her own to face it, especially when I still hadn't been able to warn her about the Blood Council and our potential danger. 7. By the time I made it back, the crowd was dispersing. Whether it was Amy leaving their line of sight or general vicinity was up for debate. All that mattered were the confused looks on their faces as they wandered away. None of them seemed quite sure why they'd been so hell-bent on storming an accounting firm's booth. Funnily enough, now that things were under control, security had shown up, moving people along to clear the aisles. The booth was far from organized or pristine. Pamphlets and business cards were strewn across the floor, and everything but the table was knocked over. Amid the chaos, Lillian was trying her best to tidy things up, the few remaining vendors and stragglers giving her ample space to work in. I took a moment to scan the area, checking for Deborah. Sure enough, she was a few booths over, looking at the display for an insulation company. As if she sensed my attention, Deborah looked up from the box of pink fluff and gave me a cheerful wave. She didn't act the part of a dangerous enemy, but then again, I didn't really act the part of a vampire, so I should know better than to judge on appearances. Whoever she was, whatever she represented, it was time to stop skewing my priorities and get some answers. "You don't need to bother with that, Lillian." I took a stack of pamphlets from her hand and dropped them unceremoniously on the table, which gave an unexpected groan. Maybe it had taken damage in the chaos. "Let's go somewhere private and talk. Things have been happening today, and I think you're the most qualified person to shed some light on them."
"Who's going to man the booth if we go for a stroll?" Lillian pointed out.
"No one. But on the upside, it's not like we have to worry about anyone trashing the place." I gestured to the scene around us, drawing an unexpected laugh out of Lillian. She followed as I led us back off the trade show floor and into the stairwell I'd used to make my calls earlier. As we left, I unintentionally locked eyes with Deborah, who gave me a warm smile. Try as I might, I couldn't actually perceive anything unsettling about her, which made her all the more dangerous. At least with people like Quinn and Petra, I knew what I was dealing with. Deborah wasn't so easy to read. Getting to the stairwell wasn't hard,
although we did run into some jerk sneaking a smoke when we arrived. He apologized quickly, snuffing out his cigarette in a portable ashtray, and beat a hasty retreat. It was a minor inconvenience, though neither Lillian nor I were happy about the lingering stink in the air. This was why we didn't let Arch smoke indoors, save for Charlotte's special lounge. Finally on our own, away from crowds and prying ears, I debated over where to start. Should I fill her in on everything that had happened? Lillian had been there for pretty much all of it, so she likely didn't need a refresher. I could kick things off with Deborah, but on her own, the new vampire hadn't done or said much, not so far as I could prove, anyway. No, there was really only one place to kick off this conversation, and it was with the most pertinent piece of information Deborah had offered. Lillian, have you ever heard of the Blood Council? Up until that point, part of me was expecting Lillian to laugh at the term, or maybe take it in stride, basically do anything that might prove Deborah wrong. I'd seen her shrug off threats of death and starvation with a grin on her face, so it was hard to imagine anything would make her show fear. In that second, I no longer had to imagine it. Lillian's eyes went wide as pure, naked terror flashed across her face. She looked around the empty stairwell, frantic, as if she might suddenly discern someone behind her, listening to every word we uttered. Only when she was satisfied we were alone did Lillian turn back to me.
"Sometimes I forget your sire didn't stick around to teach you about this stuff. Yes, Frederick, I am very familiar with the Blood Council as an entity, although I've been fortunate enough to never meet one of them in person. They're our version of the Boogeyman."
I thought that was agents.
"Agents scare every parahuman," Lillian explained. "The Blood Council deals only with vampires. They are the highest authoritative body our kind has, composed of the oldest, strongest vampires in existence. Agents deal with treaties, making sure the parahumans play nicely with both each other and the mundane people. The Blood Council sticks to issues between vampires, especially clans. Their authority is built into our treaties, too. So if they order the purging of a vampire, or even an entire clan, the agency doesn't have grounds to stop them."
The oldest and strongest. So, if Deborah was telling the truth, that meant she was among the most formidable vampires in existence. As someone who is generally weaker than even normal vampires, I had no aspirations of overpowering her in the first place, but it was still worrying to realize what a tremendous gap lay between our capabilities. If they're that important, why haven't they come up before? This seems like it would have been a solid option for dealing with the House of Terva's attempt to annex me. Lillian blanched, then shook her head emphatically.
"Hell no. First off, they definitely would have sided with an established clan over an abandoned vampire, so that was never even an option. Second, bringing in the Blood Council is dangerous for everyone involved. If they feel their time has been wasted, they'll punish the people who called them, often in a very permanent fashion. The Blood Council is supposed to be a last-ditch effort, the sort of move you only make if you're genuinely desperate. Given your propensity for taking long shots, I'm betting that's exactly why no one's ever mentioned them to you before. How did you even find out about them? And at a trade show, no less."
While she hadn't exactly taken the first part well, I still trusted Lillian and her composure. Besides, if my clan was in trouble, then they had a right to know. A vampire approached me earlier today, claiming to be from the Blood Council. She said a complaint had been filed, and that the House of Fred was under evaluation. To her credit, Lillian didn't leap up and sprint out of the building. That said, she did jolt and scan the area again, this time leaping up a few stories of stairs to be absolutely sure we were alone. When she came back down, The fear on her face had been replaced by resolve. She'd made peace with the situation.
"Did the vampire give you a name?"
"She called herself Deborah," I said. "So she can't be too old, at least. That seems like a fairly modern name."
"It's not. There were Deborahs in the Bible, Frederick."
It's hard to say why that part of everything hit me so hard. After everything Lillian had just told me, it should have been a trivial detail. Yet it was all I could do not to reel at the thought. With the probable exception of Gideon, who kept his private life extremely private, everyone I knew measured their lifespan in decades or centuries. The idea of someone living for thousands of years, that was troublesome to wrap my head around. How much had I changed in just the handful of years since I was turned? How different would I be if I kept up this pace for a millennium? There was no guarantee that Deborah actually hailed from ancient times. It was just a name, and that alone proved nothing. But going by Lillian's description of the Blood Council, the lifespan would make sense. She'd specifically said only the oldest and strongest served. "Do you know anything about a vampire named Deborah?" I asked.
"If I didn't get the point across, then let me say it plain. The Blood Council isn't something we tend to casually talk about."
Lillian was still looking around, nervous, visibly uncomfortable with the topic. The amount this scared her told me it was a threat to take seriously, and every word she spoke only drove the lesson further home.
"I heard a few rumors here and there over the decades. No one knows who heads it up, but supposedly vampires named Tadita and Okoro have appeared as representatives. Never heard of a Deborah, not that it matters. The vampire is less important than the power they represent."
It was a good point. I didn't need to worry about the individual just yet, not until I was fully aware of what the Blood Council as a whole wanted with me. Evaluation was a vague concept. I was going to need more to go on before I could decide the best path forward. Slowly, so as not to startle my friend in her jumpy state, I caught the handle of the door leading back to the convention area. "I'm going to speak with Deborah, clan leader to council representative, and find out what they want. When it's over, I'll call you. If you don't hear from me by sunset, pack the booth up as best you can and go back to Charlotte Manor. Crystal is on a mission, so get in touch with Arch and tell him everything that happened today. He'll either know what to do or who to ask next."
"I should go with you."
"You don't need to face her alone." The fear in Lillian's eyes had subsided slightly. She was still visibly shaken, but refused to let it hold her back. I admired that determination and resolve. It was part of what had showed me how formidable Lillian was in the first place. But even determination has limits. "If we both go and she kills us, then no one will know what happened. You're my backup plan, Lillian. You're the one who makes sure our friends are in the loop. And, to be perfectly honest, if someone from the Blood Council decided to kill me, do you think having another vampire at my side would make a difference?"
"Having 10 vampires at your side wouldn't make a difference," Lillian admitted. "But I still don't like you going in alone."
"Neither do I. But I knew the responsibility I was taking on when I formed this clan, and it's my duty to keep it safe." I spun around, leaving the stairwell before I had a chance for my mind to be changed. If there was one thing I'd learned from Crystal, it was that, sometimes, bravery was a matter of charging in before common sense had time to catch up. Making my way through the halls, I noticed something was off. But it wasn't until I returned to the trade show floor that I realized what had happened. It was empty. Not a single living soul to be found in the aisles or booths. A complete wasteland. The lone figure that remained was a single person who certainly didn't qualify as living. Deborah was here, alone, and waiting for me.
8. How?
Not the most brilliant question, I'll grant you, but certainly a salient one, given the circumstances. Deborah was sitting in one of the chairs at the Fletcher Accounting Services booth, restacking the business cards with unexpected efficiency. "Come on, Fred. You seem the sort who can put this together. From what I've read, you're a smart man. Think back on all that's happened today and hunt for the common theme. I bet you'll figure it out." The common theme? Well, there was the aggressive drunk who pissed off Richard, the crowd of people storming our booth, and now the sudden evacuation of an entire trade show. What was the common theme? People, maybe? No, humans. A human who knew just how to piss off Richard. Humans who'd flooded our booth. Humans were the ones who had left the scene. Did she have the power to control them? It wasn't in the standard vampire toolkit, but part of what made our kind so dangerous was that we took on the traits of other parahumans when we drank from them. I hadn't run into any parahumans that could completely control minds, however. The mind was a fickle, fearsome thing that resisted outside dictators. Influencing a brain, on the other hand, was much more viable. You drank from a parahuman with the ability to mess with people's heads. I don't know if you're fiddling with their emotions, showing them illusions, or what, but my guess is you're doing something along those lines. With a set of cards restacked, Deborah turned away from the table, meeting my eyes and applauding briefly. "Bravo! Most vampires your age would assume some manner of brute force, or make things far too complicated, suspecting the use of potions, magic, or other trickery. You were vague, but in the right ballpark. A little extra aggression and some suggestions for how to vent it with a drunk, dialing back people's self-control when they encounter a mage with enhanced charms, giving a whole trade show floor the hallucination of a fire alarm. Nudges, really. People are often ready to make the wrong choice. They just need an opportunity." I was, admittedly, not the most educated on the parahuman world by this point, but I still knew enough to understand that influencing an entire trade show at once was not a small feat. "What kind of creature did you drink from to fool that many humans at once?" Deborah wagged her finger at me, along with a few tisk noises. Ah, Fred. I don't mind questions in general. Heaven knows you have much to learn, but you're not getting anything that specific. I won't be teaching you about one of my favorite bloods to drink, and, may I say, the question itself underlines a fundamental failure in your understanding of how our power works. To clarify, the creature I drank from wouldn't have been able to touch that many minds. They lack the raw strength. When we take on their traits, we take them on at our level of skill and power. And the older we are, the more punch those abilities have. The wisdom of experience is nice, but that's the real reason vampires are feared as they increase in age. That was not the answer I'd been expecting. Carefully, I made my way to another chair, righted it, and sat. Vampires were able to draw more power from what they drank as they aged. What, then, would happen if someone from the Blood Council took a sip of blood from someone like Gideon's blood? A single drop had augmented my strength to near unmanageable levels. I couldn't imagine the horror an older vampire might cause with that kind of power. No wonder dragons naturally evolved an aura of terror to cow vampires. It was a defense mechanism against creatures that could grow exponentially stronger if they managed to draw even a small amount of blood. "You see, Fred, this is a prime example of the issue you're facing. As an abandoned vampire, you haven't been properly educated in the ways and culture of our people. The House of Terva has claimed you are so lacking, in fact, that you do not have the authority as a vampire to form your own clan." Of course the House of Terva would say that, After the jerks had tried to force me into their ranks, their representative ended up furious when I founded a new clan to prevent annexation. Though I hadn't expected or known about it at the time, many of my friends had joined in the effort and become members of the House of Fred. Albert, Neil, Lillian, Bubba, Amy, all of them were in this mess because they'd wanted to help me. If you're here talking to me instead of outright killing me, should I take that as a sign that the Blood Council hasn't sided with the House of Turva yet?
This is so refreshing. I can't tell you how many fools would try to attack me or run at this point instead of putting the pieces together.
Somehow, despite the content of the discussion, Deborah was still perfectly at ease and spoke with sincere warmth. It was unusual by vampire standards, or the standards I'd encountered thus far, but as it was helping me keep a level head through a tense situation, I wasn't complaining.
"You're quite right," she continued. "At the moment, the decision is considered pending. Some of the others wanted to purge you outright once they learned you'd allowed non-vampires into your clan. But I persuaded them to let me do a full evaluation first. Most of your alliances are worthless against us, sorry to say, but even the Blood Council shows prudence before killing a servant for the King of the West."
Part of me wanted to protest the word servant, since Gideon and I were more akin to business acquaintances. In another context, we might have actually been friends, but there was only one non-dragon Gideon cared enough about to hold that title, and it wasn't me. Regardless, I could see Deborah's hesitation. As one of the most powerful dragons in the world, Gideon was not someone to risk the ire of lightly. I'd once done him a favor, and in return, he'd offered to wipe out the House of Turva in a single night. Scared as Lillian was of the Blood Council, I had no doubt they were powerful. However, I'd actually gotten a peek at Gideon's true abilities once, and if it was a fight between him and anything less than a god, I'd put heavy money on Gideon to win.
"I think I get it. The House of Turva wants me gone, and others probably do too, because I broke some unspoken rule. But if you kill me, you might inconvenience or annoy Gideon, who isn't shy about showing his displeasure. So, instead, you're doing an evaluation of me to see if the claims about me are true. If they aren't, then I go free?
And the House of Turva pays for calling us in without cause," Deborah added. I tried not to think about that at the moment. There were other concerns to tackle first.
"Understood. And what happens if I fail this test of yours?"
"Ordinarily, we would purge your entire clan from existence." For the first time, Deborah looked a bit sad, as though she disliked the idea.
"In your case, Fred, we're willing to make an exception. If you'll enter into a deal with me tonight, agree to abide by our decision no matter what, then I will promise to leave the rest of your clan untouched in the event of failure."
It wasn't hard to figure out the angle she was coming from, especially after a Vegas Thanksgiving surrounded by Dracolings.
"Because while dragons might not respect the authority of your Blood Council, every dragon respects the integrity of a bargain. You want me to trade away Gideon's protection in exchange for your agreement to kill only me if this goes badly?"
Spot on. Not an ounce of guile or annoyance slipped through. Was Deborah a master deceiver, or did she genuinely not care that I'd realized what she was doing? That was yet one more thing to ponder in a day that had already given me several things to mull over. Mercifully, the deal she offered wasn't one I had to waste thought on.
"You have yourself a bargain."
Deborah's eyebrows rose several inches, surprise plain on her face.
"Just like that?"
"They're only in danger because they wanted to help me. The least I can do as the head of this clan is to keep them safe, so yes, just like that." "Or was the deal not genuine?"
"Oh, it was genuine, all right," Deborah confirmed.
I guess I was expecting you to ask more questions about what the evaluation entails. I have countless questions to ask, but protecting my people comes first. Now, if you want... The sound of a door opening cut me off. People poured back into the trade show. Evidently, whatever trick Deborah had used had worn off, or she'd summoned them to return in a way I didn't notice. Unlike me, she was unsurprised, hopping out of her chair with a quick bound. "Pleasure speaking with you, Fred. I'm going to send this information back up the chain for now and leave you to the rest of your day. Take care of yourself. I'll see you again soon." With only a few steps, Deborah merged into the crowd, passing through them like they weren't even there, making it off the trade show floor in seconds despite going against the flow of traffic. I didn't try to stop or follow her, as that would have put me in pointless peril. Whatever the Blood Council wanted with me, they'd reach out when it suited them. Until then, I clearly needed to learn more about what I was up against, and perhaps I'd put some affairs in order, just in case. 9. The rest of the day, what little remained, passed without incident. Since Deborah was gone, I called Lillian and had her rejoin me at the booth, partly for the company, but also to keep her in sight. I didn't know Deborah well enough to be sure she was sincere about keeping my clan out of our situation, and Lillian's description of the Blood Council had hardly painted them as models of restraint. It wasn't as though I'd be able to do anything if Deborah did attack, not if she was as old and powerful as the rumors indicated, but at least having two of us there might enable Lillian to escape while I employed diversionary tactics. Until I knew more, the best moves I could make were ones that prioritized safety above all else. As such, we didn't hang around the trade show once the sun began to set. Since the booth was already wrecked, Lillian and I decided to take the thing down early. The organizers of the event wouldn't be happy, but between an assault and a near riot, I suspected that Fletcher Accounting Services wasn't going to get an invitation next year regardless. Although it had taken me a long while, I'd eventually learned that it was impossible to stay on everyone's good side. So, rather than trying, I focused on the choices that gave Lillian and me our best chances of survival. Getting out of there before true nightfall was a big step toward safety, since right now, at least, we were only dealing with Deborah. Once the sun was down, she could summon any number of reinforcements with ease. Lillian had quick hands, and I'd dealt with the booth enough to dissemble it by memory. By the time night was upon us, we had already packed everything into the truck with the enchanted glass, so vampires didn't turn crispy, that we had rented for the day and were just pulling onto the highway. There was minimal conversation as we drove. I filled Lillian in on the deal Deborah and I had made just to be safe. If something happened to me, I wanted there to be others who knew my clan was owed mercy. As much as dragons respected a bargain, they had no tolerance for those who broke such deals. The sooner I could make certain Gideon knew the score, the safer everyone would be. To that end, I called Richard and left a message breaking down the situation. He would ensure Gideon was abreast of the new developments. It was nice to ride in relative silence. It allowed me time to process my thoughts. Most of the others would have been upset with me for making such a decision, for putting myself in danger to keep them safe. Lillian was far from heartless, but she was also older and more pragmatic than many of those in our group. She was the sort who could see that if one situation risked the entire clan and another risked only me, there was really no other choice I could have taken. Given her obvious research, Deborah had no doubt known I'd make that decision going in, even if she'd been surprised by how quickly I'd reached the conclusion. Maybe I could have pressed the Gideon advantage to make her back off completely, but I knew that wouldn't be a permanent solution. Slowly, I was learning to think in the long term, like any ageless being should. Using Gideon might have bought me some breathing room if he was feeling helpful and things broke just right, However, sooner or later, things would change. He might get old and step down, or die. One of us could move, changing his sphere of influence. Eventually, something would change, and when it did, I'd be back to staring at the Blood Council. Only this time, they'd be looking for payback for being forced to back off. Better to face the issue now, while we were on amicable terms, no bad blood between us. It was the best shot I had at a fair evaluation, whatever that entailed, and if things did go wrong, at least I wouldn't drag the people I cared about down with me.
Frederick, that's not one of our vehicles.
Lillian's voice snapped me out of my reverie, and I realized we'd arrived at Charlotte Manor. Unpacking the truck should have been our first concern, but I followed Lillian's gaze to the gray minivan parked near the front of the lot. It was nondescript, the kind of automobile one could see in droves outside a school or soccer game. The only distinguishing feature was a bright yellow bumper sticker with thick red words. It had the word I, then a cartoon heart, followed by the words Blood Donors. Silly as it was, the sight still sent a shiver up my spine. I started to tell Lillian to wait in the car, but thought better of it. Charlotte Manor was a fortress when it wanted to be. Lillian had a better chance of survival inside those walls than outside, especially with an ancient vampire in the mix. I wasn't sure if Charlotte could stand up to an opponent like that, but I knew she'd hold out longer than Lillian would in the open air. Together, we made our way across the parking lot, lit now by the stars of the new night. I didn't bother with a knock. Instead, I opened the door firmly, albeit with at least some care, in case someone stood on the other side. Sure enough, Deborah was there in the foyer, having a discussion with the elderly woman form Charlotte often wore when working the main desk. She could look like anyone or anything, since her true form was, in fact, the house itself, and she tended to use different faces to fill specific roles. After a few steps, I realized that Deborah and the old woman weren't the only ones here. Arch had appeared from around a corner, a small stack of papers in hand.
"If you could sign these last two forms, then I think we're all set to go."
"Gladly, and just in time at that. Looks like the man of the hour has finally joined us." Deborah turned, looking to Lillian and me as we made our way inside. "Don't worry, the tedious parts have all been handled. While you and I were having our talk, the Blood Council sent representatives to meet with the agent currently in charge of your safety. All the forms have been filled out, and the boxes are checked, so the little arrangement we made this afternoon is nice and legal."
"Fred still has to sign them and formally agree to the terms," Arch reminded her.
To me, he said, "Take your time and read them over. We're using standard forms for the most part, and the rest were checked over by agency lawyers. I'm sorry about this, I am. However, the Blood Council is acting within the law." "It's fine, Arch. I know the limits agents have to work within. Although I do find it strange that the Blood Council sent a representative on the same day Crystal suddenly left for a mysterious trip." Deborah didn't so much as blink.
"That wasn't strange. It was planned. An agent with her history was seen as a risk element, someone who might not play by the rules when a person she loved was on the line. We knew about her request to the Queen of Winter, so we reached out to the Fae and created a coordinated timetable. It was the best way to ensure that everything went smoothly, regardless of the outcome."
When Deborah said it like that, the situation made total sense. In truth, I probably would have done the exact same thing had our positions been reversed. That fact alone worried me. Most everyone I'd faced or dealt with in the parahuman world had approached problems from a position of strength. They had faith in their power or their organization and had proceeded forward as if the idea of defeat was unfathomable. Deborah, a vampire who supposedly ranked amongst the most dangerous in existence, wasn't doing that. She'd laid plans, thought ahead, moved troublesome pieces off the game board before I'd even known we were playing. Deborah acted like someone who knew it was possible for her to lose and had no intention of doing so. Everything she'd done so far had pinned me down to the exact decisions she'd wanted me to make, and worse, she was about to get her way yet again. I gave the papers a thorough read, but Arch was right. Aside from the addendum about putting myself in danger to spare the rest of the clan, it was really pretty boilerplate. Not only was it legal, they even had a default form for dealing with the Blood Council stepping in to check on a clan. I wondered if this happened more than other vampires realized, or if there had just been some temp that went above and beyond in document specialization. It didn't really matter either way, and I pushed the idea aside as I signed the pages. Even knowing I was being walked into the choice, I still couldn't make any other move. This ensured the safety of my friends. When it was just me on the line, I might be able to get creative or take risks. Not on this part, though. When the last page was signed, Arch collected the papers from me.
"Charlotte has prepared dinner, if you two want to have a private discussion. No blood, I'm afraid."
"I can get blood on my own, but from what I've read, the cuisine here is impeccable," Deborah replied, a new burst of enthusiasm running through her. Truth be told, half the reason I took this assignment was an excuse to try Charlotte's legendary cooking. Would someone be so kind as to tell me where to drop my bags? Through a nearby door, a wide-necked man with thick arms appeared, another form of Charlotte's, this one serving as a porter.
"No need, ma'am. They will be in your room when dinner is finished."
With all that had been going on, I think it's forgivable that I didn't snap to the realization when Deborah mentioned her bag.
"I'm sorry, her room?
Where else would I stay while evaluating a vampire than at his clan's base? Aside from which, can you name a single place in this town with better food, service, safety, and para-human accommodations?" Deborah patted the wooden front counter, not far from where the old woman still stood, silent now that she was no longer needed. "I should also remind you that Charlotte Manor is technically incorporated as a bed and breakfast, so I booked a room and paid the rate. The Blood Council doesn't freeload. We're patrons." "Are you okay with that, Charlotte?" I wasn't sure how she might feel about this, despite her human faces appearing placid.
"Arch told me that in the long term this will make things easier on you, so as long as Deborah obeys the manor rules, she is welcome to stay here."
It was the porter who answered my question, hefting her bags effortlessly as he spoke. One by one, Deborah ticked off the rules on her fingers. "No violence toward other guests outside of self-defense, no smoking except in the smoking lounge, no trying to enter another guest's room without permission. The list goes on. I imagine that even if I did manage to forget a rule, Charlotte would make sure to keep me on the straight and narrow. Not that you need to worry about any of that. If the forms didn't give it away, I am very much about doing things by the book. If Fred fails, he'll have time to say his goodbyes and prepare for the punishment. I'm not going to secretly rip his head off in the night or anything. On that note, though, I think it's time you and I had a discussion. What do you say, Fred? Will you join me for dinner?" It wasn't really a question. Deborah had walked into my secure home and moved both the agents in my life out of the way, one by distance, the other by protocol. In a single day, she'd positioned herself in complete control of the situation and done it with casual ease. Kind as Deborah had been through the discussions thus far, her message was impossible to misinterpret. This was her show. I'd done well so far by playing along, and there was no sound reason to break that pattern just yet. Not until I knew what I was dealing with. "Dinner sounds lovely. Let's go see what Charlotte has prepared." 10. We ate alone. The rest of the house was being served elsewhere. To her credit, Deborah's polite demeanor continued as we sat down. She thanked every server and then waited until I'd been served as well before breaking into the main point of the conversation.
You must be wondering what an evaluation entails. Usually, we'd have gone over it by this point, but I didn't want to muddy the waters before we'd handled that whole Clan and Gideon issue. Which is to say, you didn't want me too scared to put myself on the line.
There was a flicker of genuine surprise in Deborah's eyes, and her soup spoon paused halfway up from the bowl.
Now, that's just a downright mean thing to say, Fred. I decided to get that detail squared away because I thought it would be the one you cared about most. Did you really want to sit through the tedium of a breakdown before you were fully assured that your clan would be safe?
She had a point there. I wasn't sure if the surprise and feigned hurt were in any way sincere, but quickly realized it didn't matter. Deborah was being polite and forthright about the situation, a situation she had not created. The House of Terva had done that when they called in the Blood Council. Deborah was fulfilling a duty of her position, nothing more. And, if I was being honest with myself, she could have stormed into my life far less pleasantly than she had. Even messing with us during the trade show was paltry compared to what her authority entailed. Boilerplate or not, I'd still read every word of those contracts used by the Blood Council.
You're right. I'm sorry for being rude. My experiences with other vampires have been mixed, to say the least, but I know better than anyone that you deserve to be judged for your own actions, not for those of others like you. I'm a little nervous about the situation as a whole. However, that's still not an excuse to conduct myself poorly, especially with someone who has been so pleasant. Aside from messing with the humans around my booth, I mean.
Just a little test to see how you handled the unexpected. Deborah paused to finally eat that spoonful of soup and made a soft noise of delight in her throat.
Oh my, that is fantastic. If this whole meal is that good, then the rumors have undersold Charlotte's level of skill.
Aside from Lillian, Deborah was the first vampire I'd encountered who ate human cuisine. Vampires didn't get nutrition from mundane food, of course, but that didn't stop our taste buds from working. The last vampire we had over was Petra from the House of Terva. He seemed to think eating human food was beneath us as vampires.
Petra is a child putting on bluster so others will think him stronger than he is.
Another spoonful of soup made it to Deborah's mouth, followed by a few more before she continued.
Of course, to me, anyone who has yet to pass a millennium is a child. So take the word with a measure of salt. My point is that Petra feels the need to put on airs to impress those around him. When a vampire reaches my age, there are very few beings they worry about impressing. So I'm free to do as I please. And that very much includes eating delicious food when it's put in front of me.
She took a few more sips and finished the bowl.
This is speculation, of course, but I suspect that might also be why so many people are unnerved by you, Fred.
I'm sorry, unnerved? I don't want to be rude again, but please understand that I have trouble seeing how anyone like me could make other parahumans worried about anything other than a tax audit.
Deborah shifted her bowl to the side, making room for the next course. Trust me, if I thought you understood what you were doing, we'd be having a very different conversation. The fact remains, though, you are worrying people, Fred. You refuse to play the game, you keep breaking rules and traditions with minimal regard, and you continuously accrue new allies across the parahuman world. Look at yourself. A sweater vest and khakis? You act as though you genuinely don't care what the rest of the vampire world thinks. And there are only two kinds of people who do that. The ones who sincerely don't know better,
and the ones who are so strong they can get away with it.
Now, given your track record and the number of alliances you have, which box do you imagine people have started putting you into?
This wasn't the first time I'd been forced to take a look at my life from the outside, without context or perspective. Yes, on paper, my friends and I had done a lot. Stopped a mad vampire, saved a dragon from imprisonment, rebuffed another clan's attempt to take over, forged an official alliance with the agency. And that was without examining how powerful the House of Fred technically was. Our membership was small, but in it were a high-ranking Therian, a genius mage, a prodigy necromancer, and a zombie who wielded a weapon of destiny. We'd gotten here through some smart moves and a lot of lucky breaks, yet it was hard to deny how someone who wasn't there for each event might view the sum of the parts as more than the whole. Still, the thought that it was all intentional, that I was some mad vampire amassing power, seemed like an even greater stretch of the imagination. It's hard to imagine anyone thinking of me as scary. Curious, more likely, especially once we've met.
Some fall into that box, Deborah admitted. Ultimately, no one seems sure what to make of you. There are few who think you're working with your sire, Quinn, shoring up support to try to overthrow the Blood Council. Others believe you to be an incompetent idiot who has survived this long only thanks to the support of those around him. My job is to cut past the bullshit and get to the truth, which brings us back to the evaluation. We could go into the minutiae of what I look at for hours, but I think the better move is just to tackle it with bullet points. There are three criteria I'm going to judge you on.
We both fell silent as servers entered through the door, whisking away our plates and topping off our drinks. There was no real reason to stop. Charlotte could hear everything inside her walls, whether a physical manifestation of her was present or not. Some habits persist in the face of logic, however, so we remained quiet until they'd left to fetch the next course.
First and foremost is the criteria I'm least worried about. Whether you intend to move against the Blood Council or any other vampire institution, just from readings and interviews, this part seems quite obviously junk. You've broken some rules here and there, but since you were abandoned by your sire, you didn't know you were breaking them. Every action you're aware you take comes with respect for the law, and usually documentation filled out in triplicate. Despite your strange friends, I don't expect I'll have to kill you for planning a rebellion.
I gave a slow nod, trying to wrap my head around the mere idea of that kind of undertaking.
It is quite sincerely the furthest thing from my mind.
I believe it.
Anyway, point number two gets a tad stickier. The House of Terva has alleged that you are not fit to lead a clan. Clans are important in the vampire world, and their leaders are seen as representatives of our kind. To have a clan head that is lacking, be it as a vampire or a leader, reflects badly on all of us. This will be the main thrust of my evaluation, discerning whether or not you are fit for the position you hold. I'm going to tag along with you just about everywhere. Sometimes I'll be in the background, sometimes I'll complicate things as I did today. The goal is to watch you in a variety of situations and see how you cope. I'll also be filling in the holes of your education. Being abandoned wasn't your fault, but you can't skate by using ignorance as an excuse forever. It's time you were properly taught how to be a vampire. There will be some additional NDAs I'll need you to sign before you can come with me to see clients. I wasn't surprised by the condition. It fit well with the clues Deborah had already been dropping. If she was going to the trouble of living with me, I had to assume she planned on spending a lot of time around me. Rather than fighting uselessly, I could at least get her to do things the appropriate way. Not so much as a suggestion of annoyance at the request,
Instead, she offered a respectful nod.
"Obviously, I don't want to undermine your business. There are other details about this aspect, too, but we can handle those after dinner. There is one more point of my evaluation, though."
She paused, and a serious expression appeared on her face.
"You have done something unheard of among vampires. You formed a clan with other parahumans as members. Some wanted to stake you the moment we heard about it, others less so. Not all of us are against the idea of changing with the times. Just because it worked one way for a while doesn't mean there aren't better options. When you've seen a few civilizations rise and fall, you learn the importance of adapting. My third point of evaluation is to decide whether or not it is wise to leave this clan of yours alone. Its existence sets a precedent, and the easier path might be to kill you and disband your clan, making sure that no one else tries anything like it. Understand that I must act with the good of all vampires in mind when making that choice. How well you do on the second criteria, even how much I might like you personally, none of that will come into play. As a clan leader, you understand what it is to have the pressure of others counting on you. With the Blood Council, our entire species is impacted by the choices we make." "I understand." I did, too. She was looking at the long term. What I had done, what my friends had done, it was unseen previously. There could be implications to our choice that spread far beyond anything we intended. I wouldn't be thrilled if she decided to kill me for it, not by any means, but I also wasn't sure I would hate her for the deed. That pressure was real even for me, and I only had a handful of people putting their faith in me. I couldn't fathom the burden of an entire species. The doors to the kitchen swung open again, and servers appeared with the fish course, causing Deborah to clap her hands in delight. "Anyway, those are the main points for tonight. We'll go over the rest as needed. Oh, there's one more thing you should know. Since I'm here, I'll be taking over the position of your bodyguard. I have to protect you until I render a verdict anyway. No one steals justice from the Blood Council, so this kills two birds with one stone." "That means you're my bodyguard until you decide to kill me?"
"Don't be silly. I would submit a formal verdict, quit the position, and then give you time for goodbyes. I couldn't just kill you while I was on the job. There's a process for these sorts of things."
Deborah dug gleefully into her food, and a few moments later, I did the same. Whether I liked it or not, it seemed I was going to have to get used to Deborah's company for a while. A bodyguard at the meeting. 1. I reviewed my options yet again, wondering if there was some avenue I had missed. Yes, for the past couple of weeks, Deborah had behaved exactly as she had promised, acting for all intents and purposes like a silent bodyguard when we were around clients or in public. She drew minimal attention. The explanation of her being my agency-appointed protection satisfied all but the most voracious of parahuman curiosities. They were well accustomed to the idea that when the agency made a decision, the rest of us had little say in the matter. Besides, Deborah didn't look particularly threatening. After the first couple of days, she'd even varied her wardrobe to include sweaters rather than the more fashionable vest variety. But those had all been simple meetings. Drop off work here, gather additional records there, nothing that generated any substantial risk or interest. This was different. Today, I was expected to meet with a new client for some serious book balancing. A mage suspected one of his underlings was embezzling funds, and my services had been recommended by Asha, who, herself, was working as the new client's lawyer, thanks to a good word or two from the Clover siblings. Working for someone with whom I had yet to build substantial trust meant that I was going to be on tenuous ground.
This was the sort of arrangement where any mishap or issue could make the whole thing fall apart. Deborah had been on her best behavior, and if that continued, then we might be okay. Yet it was hard to trust someone when I knew they'd been sent to determine whether I lived or died. Regardless of the trouble she might cause, there was no way I could find to avoid bringing her along. Deborah refused to stay behind, and I couldn't raise a fuss about confidentiality since she'd signed every contract and NDA presented. Talking her out of it was a lost cause. She would smile and chat politely, then simply refuse to budge, as she had on all previous subjects thus far. Sneaking out might be my only chance, and even that was laughable. While I still didn't have a gauge of just how powerful Deborah was, I'd seen enough to know that her senses were sharp and always focused. With Charlotte's help, I might manage to get out the door, but after that, it would be mere moments until Deborah was at my side once more. Ultimately, no matter how I turned the situation around in my head, the end result was always that Deborah came along. So, faced with that inevitability, I opted to at least approach it politely. I let Deborah know about the job in the morning, giving her ample time to prepare. She would take an occasional nap in her room when the sun was overhead, the only time vampires are able to sleep, but appeared to require less rest than myself or Lillian. Sure, we could push ourselves when needed, however, sooner or later, we'd have to crash. Deborah was getting by on maybe a half hour's sleep every couple of days, and not losing a single step. Inconvenient and worrying as it might be, I had to admit that there was something fascinating about having an older vampire around. Would I have those sleep habits after 1,000 years, or did it take longer? What else was going to change as time wore on and my body stayed the same? I had a hunch that, if I asked, Deborah would answer. In fact, I suspected she was waiting on me to start asking questions. As an abandoned vampire, there was so much I didn't know, so many surprises that kept popping up and causing trouble. Learning from her was a real opportunity, one I was squandering even as I struggled to figure out why. I shoved those thoughts aside. There were larger issues to deal with. Questions could wait until we didn't have a client to impress. Credit where it was due, Deborah was waiting for me downstairs 10 minutes before we were scheduled to leave. This evening, her crisp, precise wardrobe had been replaced by a lavender sweater with kittens on it and a pair of sturdy jeans. I genuinely couldn't tell if she was trying to match the overall tone of my own ensembles, or if she was simply making fun of me. Regardless, I wanted unobjectionable, and kittens on a sweater were about as unobjectionable as one could get. Stars overhead, we drove out from Charlotte Manor, heading into Winslow's downtown. Most parahumans preferred some sense of isolation, placing physical or psychic distance between themselves and humans. Richard might use a downtown office, but he also lived there and owned the entire building, leasing the majority of the space to businesses owned by fellow parahumans. This was a different case, as our destination accommodated humans as well. No doubt the rent was cheaper, enough to make up for the security risks that came with a shared space. Coming at night, we'd be unlikely to encounter anyone unexpected. However, we still had to be on guard. First impressions counted for a lot. This woman we're meeting, she's the human who put through the paperwork to found your clan. Deborah's voice caught me by surprise. I was so wrapped up in mentally planning for the work ahead that I'd nearly forgotten people often conversed while riding in cars together. Her statement was surprising in itself, although not quite groundbreaking. That sort of information would be a matter of record, and as a member of the Blood Council, Deborah no doubt would have access to such information when reviewing challenges such as the one the Tervas had placed against me. I had mentioned during the briefing that we'd be meeting a woman named Asha. I just hadn't expected Deborah to pay quite so much attention to a minor detail. "That's correct.
Asha Patel learned about parahumans when someone announced their plans to buy and demolish Charlotte Manor while we were inside those very walls. Charlotte took it poorly, as you can imagine, but we eventually reached a compromise that left everyone alive. I told Asha to drink so hard the night would fade into a blacked-out memory. Instead, she dove headfirst into supernatural law until she could practice it. A go-getter, and someone brave enough to face the truth of the world without flinching. Sounds like an interesting woman. I look forward to meeting her. Do we have a name on the mage yet? I shook my head, nearly on reflex. No details until we're officially hired for the job. Apparently, this is being kept very quiet. The only reason we're getting a meeting is because of the good work Asha has done. It gave her recommendation weight. Meeting without names is a bit odd, I know, but it happens occasionally with parahuman clients. As a species, we tend to value our privacy. Technically, parahumans are made up of dozens of species, if not hundreds, but I take the point.